Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Poetry allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of the show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make a difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. We are on the website allpoetry.com in the group Late Night Poets. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because that way you can follow along, read with us, and see all the contests that let you be on the show. So I hope that everyone thinks about joining the group and participating. Today is a very exciting episode because it is the first episode with the new co-host, Babbler.
Woo!
Hi. Welcome, Babbler. So excited to have you on the team.
Yeah, happy to be here. I feel honored to have the offer extended. So thank you very much for thinking of me.
Of course. You know, I was listening to people's comments on the shows and seeing who's insightful and awesome, and you were definitely up there. So I was good to have you here. And Pam, are you with us?
Of course I am. And welcome, Babbler. Also glad to have you be part of the team. And how are you ladies both today?
Pretty good.
I'm tired. I'm good.
Awesome. Awesome.
It's been a good book week, you know, like I found Pam's book, well, I mean, really the late night poet book, but the Pam's virtuoso version of it, the Into the Darkness at the library. So I was excited about that. And then I got Rob Cohen's book in the mail today. So I was excited about that. It's been like all the books this week from our online writer.
Oh,
nice. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. I'm happy. I just got to visit with my son for an hour, except for I had one of those moments where, you know, we were chit-chatting, and I looked at the clock, and I went, oh, shit, the show starts in 5 minutes. If I don't put a cow or something in the room, Aphasia is going to be going, where is she?
It's true, especially because this has been one of those weeks where, you know, people disappear on me.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I do have a couple of people to bring on.
Wonderful.
And so first of all, I'm going to bring in the first-time caller, James Notley, I believe is the last name. I'd like to say welcome, James. Glad you could join us.
Hi.
Welcome,
and,
James.
Hi. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to read my poem.
Of course. Great to have you here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And
thank you very much.
Next up is a man who needs no introduction because he calls every woman's show except mine, Frank. Hi, Frank.
she's jealous. Frank.
I'm making a special for you, my dear. Thank you very much.
You're going to have to call her sometime or else she's going to hate me. She's going to be too jealous.
Most definitely.
Thanks, Frank. So for those of you who are following along on the Late Night Poet Group, Frank is also known as Poetic Picasso. So sometimes we have multiple names just to confuse everyone.
It's only me. It's just me.
Yes, that's great. All right, so James, I know you've been on hold for a bit, so I'm going to get you to read first. And you're not in the group yet, are you?
I'm with All Poetry.
Okay, on All Poetry, but not in Late Night. So, well, I'm silly, I just sent you the link to your own thing. But if you want to follow along tonight with us, I will send you the links of who we're reading so you can follow along. And we are going to start with you as our newcomer, so welcome.
That would be great. The title of my poem is Mother Nature's Bat. I don't care for the sunshine because it doesn't make me warm. I prefer a hurricane, a monsoon, or a heavy rainstorm. Feel the rage, feel the wrath. Nothing like being outside partaking in Mother Nature's bath. See the destruction of windows, bricks, and steel. No building left standing. It is quite surreal. How could one woman be responsible for such a catastrophe? This question I ponder with various debris flying at me. I fear no woman as her winds push me to the left and right. I accept her challenge. I will stand firm and fight. The rain and hail pounding on my face, I don't care what she throws at me. I will not leave this place. Give me your best, girlfriend. Give me your best. I am a rock, I say, as I take my last breath. No, I will not give in to a woman who controls the weather. I will definitely sit down and pen a disgruntled letter. Mother Nature has many secrets, keeps in her cabinet. I have to be determined because I am not having it. Maybe when a woman is scorned, it amounts to another vicious storm. It can leave a man tattered like me, tattered and torn. I guess I will have to learn to find adequate shelter. It is the only way a man can avoid a woman's helter-skelter. Thank you very much.
Great read. I'm glad that you're here to read it yourself. You have a great reading voice, and there's a lot of feeling in that. I love the connection to the storm here. Prefer a hurricane, a monsoon, or a heavy rainstorm. And the rage and wrath that feels like it's in those storms. I'm personally a bit of a storm bug myself, and I loved that connection there. I really like the way that you speak of Mother Nature, like this woman who's throwing a bit of a fit, and, you know, it's you're going to just defy that and not let her attack you too much with this rain and the hail and all of that. I thought it was really clever the way that you worded it. Where is it now? Well, I've lost my spot. But I also really liked, I will definitely sit down and pen a disgruntled letter. I'm just picturing like Mother Nature being like, oh, you didn't like that storm? Well, it was great. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a very creative take on the prompt, which, in all the excitement of Babbler's first day, I forgot to read the prompt. So the prompt is, poets are always taking the weather so personally. They're always sticking their emotion in things that have no emotions, which is a quote by J.D. Salinger in Nine Stories. And I think that this was an excellent response to that prompt.
Well, you know, I was looking at it, as you said, you know, with the twist of a woman and storm, and it was going to shake me, but she wasn't going to break me, so to speak.
Yeah, I love that. Babbler, what were your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this piece. I think it has really great humor to it. And just how the tone of the narrator changes, you know, I'm not dealing with this. I'm going to go out there and take it on. Turns into, well, I guess I better find somewhere to hide, and I'll just have to put my concerns here in a letter. You know, it's quite like the whip dog change of attitude that I enjoyed. And then I love some of the creative rhyming in here that is pulled off by rhythm, you know, like best and breath and shelter and skelter. But I particularly loved cabinet and habinet. You know, I love those rhymes. I like off rhymes, but I had never seen cabinet and having it. But it works so well because the rhythm and pacing of those words are so similar. I feel like this piece had a really strong voice. So thanks for calling in and sharing.
Yeah, I'm really impressed that the visual message got across. That was important to me.
Great comment, Babs. And Frank, what were your thoughts?
No, I thought this was a very powerful piece here. I like the way the personification there of Mother Nature's bath. It's a very vivid there. The whole notion here of the personification here explores a lot of depth here of the mind, the visual aspects of the mind here. And although I appreciate the line there, I am a rock, I say, if I take my last breath, very telling there of this piece here. There is a sense of, I say, personification here that just exudes with deep, profound, ruminative thoughts here. And that last answer would be the one that it really took me there. Maybe when a woman is scorned, it amounts to another viscous storm. There is that notion there of, I would say, commotion But there's also there's a certain array of emotions here, and very descriptive is this poem here. It's very poetic as well. It was a great piece.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the analysis, and to find, you know, someone that gets the creativity that flows throughout the poem really is amazing.
Oh, you're welcome, my friend.
Thank you very much.
And I hear Marcus is with us. Welcome, Marcus. Or are you?
Yes, hello.
Oh, hi. Were you able to hear James's poem?
Oh, definitely. I read the whole thing. It was great. I actually read it twice. The Wrath of a Woman Scorned. Gary Kill. Beautiful poem.
Great.
Yeah,
welcome to the show. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Continue. I'm sorry to interrupt. It definitely has that twist with the storm and relating it somewhat to actually getting Mother Nature, you know, the feminine side, and where that's implicated throughout the flow of the poem.
Well said. Pam, are you back with us yet? Not yet.
I am actually.
I'm sorry, who was that?
Yeah, I thought the use of a storm made for a great extended metaphor for getting through difficult times together. Because, you know, sometimes when somebody's going through a hard time and they're lashing out, or they're going through a hard time and they're crying a lot, whatever it is, you know, it's all about being there for each other and making it through that storm so at the end you can find that rainbow. Just an excellent write. I'm glad you called in to read it, and very well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pam. Frank, I've put yours up now, if you're willing to read your poem for us.
Yes, bear with me. All right. This is a piece I wrote. Fortunately, I wasn't able to add it into the contest. It ended when I tried to add it in. Nevertheless, I was able to write for it, and it was inspired by that quote there that's on the board there. And I call this poem here, "The Phoenix Sits With Me in the Darkness," and it goes like this. A shadow in the darkness resuscitates the beast in her, but the nocturnal fire burns into the gradual ashes strewn, that the scars that she bears now are seen visibly in drear solitude. She becomes the haunting shadow of Gothic legends told. The dragon in her burdened chest is the eerie image of her torment, but she refuses to be forced to bow in reverence of this piercing doom. She is wary of the bloody sword that abates her heart in her reign. Her sorrow wakes weeping willows, but a mournful of the bitterness. A terrible cry is silent afterwards. In a daunting sorrow of the night, her breath lost in the vapors of fog, swathing in a forsaken oasis of death. She tries to sleep under the moon and rests within the realm of dreams, for there is no more fighting of bones, awaiting the bracing winds of fate. Amidst the shades engulfing a gloom, pervading over the suspense of the night, the phoenix sits with me in the darkness, so quietly and faithful, like a loyal friend. And she whispers to me, "We'll be rising to witness a brink of dawn approaching. Did she wait and see in the early morning the spirits who come to awaken her sleep?" End of poem.
Wow, that was beautiful. Great read, Frank. And I should say that Frank wrote to the second prompt, which is Some nights, the wolf inside of me shrinks to nothing. She bares her teeth and runs away. The dragon in my chest rejects me. She's so tired of being slain. There are nights when the lioness cowers, says she can't fight it another day. What about the phoenix? She sits with me in the darkness. She whispers, "We'll rise, just you wait," which was by SRW Poetry. And this is a wonderful response, Frank. I absolutely loved it. You create such a dark kind of atmosphere, but yet beautiful, into the gradual ashes strewn as the scars that she bears now. You bring this woman to life in like a really gothic, gorgeous way. I especially liked the middle stanza about the dragon, where it had the refusal to be forced to bow, and she was not going to be, where is it? I like the way that it said, reverence of this piercing doom. She is wary of the bloody sword, and like the alliteration of weeping willow, but really it's just like you set this beautiful scene and tone within like the metaphor of her power and her pain. You have such a beautiful vocabulary. You know, I always say that you're eloquent and elegant, and it's always true. You have such an interesting kind of old school formality that I really enjoy.
Well, I appreciate that. This poem here, if I can just elaborate here, is actually talking about, to some certain extent, a vanquished queen.
Mm-hmm. And it does that so well. Babbler, what did you think?
Thank you, my dear.
I really liked this. You know, I picture this woman as like a fuel that is running low, that is burning out. And I can almost see like the flaking ash in the wind, you know, the dragon that that is, you know, just torched her, and that she is now, you know, full of sadness and bitterness and closing down. But yet this phoenix still waits to bring her back to life and set her aflame again. I thought this was just so interesting, and it is very, like, it's dark and it feels almost mythical, you know, with the mention, of course, of the phoenix and the dragon, but also just the use of language. It does feel a little more classic, and it really gives it that kind of epic feel, like I'm about to read a novel. I loved it. I thought it was a great piece.
No, I appreciate that, my dear. Thank you very much.
James, would you like to comment?
Well, you know, it was dark. And the imagery really, it carries through the whole poem of a little pain and a little suffering, and that comes across pretty strong.
It does. I agree.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much, my friend.
Sure.
Marcus, what did you think?
I was rereading. I'm sorry. I'm on my skull candy, so I don't know if I'm coming through.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, cool. It had an awesome Michael Moorcock feel. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the awesome Michael Moorcock, but this is spot on, man. This is really good. Good stuff.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, my friend.
And Pam, what were your thoughts?
This is a beautiful and haunting, very elegant language, strong emotions. I really like the dragon in her burden chest, the eerie image of her torment, the idea of what builds up inside of us being the mirror image of the torment we went through. I thought we go through a strong part. I also like her breath lost in the vapors of fog, swathing in a forsaken oasis of death. That's just really gripping imagery. Excellent writing, very well done.
No, I appreciate that, Pam, and hopefully next time I get a chance to read on your program. It's not issue with me, I guess, is the time, I guess, my dear, but definitely I'll try to squeeze some time next time.
Well, I appreciate that. Next week is the dark show. I look forward to hearing from you.
What time is it? I can ask. Can I ask you what time it is?
It's the same as mine, but the day before.
All right. Well, just send me a message afterwards. All right, my friends. I'm going to have to run now. I've got to get midnight here, and I've got to get up in the morning. But I just want to say thank you for allowing me to read this poem and to share a wonderful night of all of you.
Thank you for bringing it. Good night.
Yes, thank you. Always,
always
Frank.
A pleasure. Always my support this year for all of you. Take care.
Thank
Bye.
You. Good night, Frank.
Bye.
Okay. Buenas noches.
Be safe.
Babbler, I have put you up on the board.
Oh. all right. This is for that first prompt. So this is rain. The rain comes down and down and down in waves of familiar gray. Bare scalps shiver. It falls down cheeks, pools in the corners of mouths. The droplets take the path of salted ancestors, weaving toward the chin, drip, drip, dropping into snaking streams headed out to sea. Pattering music calls parched roots to sip, spiders to flee for higher ground. Ozone pockets form, scenting the pavement, washing oil from the road. This is just rain, tumbling from the sky. It did not tell you how to feel. And yet, end poem.
Great read. And, you know, despite the fact that it's called rain, and like you say, it's just rain, I felt like it was tears, like there was a deep sadness here. When you talk about the salted ancestors, I'm thinking of the salt of the tears, and as it goes, like it's like a family history of pain was naturally where my head went. And, you know, the drip dropping into snaking streams, even though it should be streams, like actually like in the nature, my mind automatically went to like tears that were leaving like into like a pool. I don't know. This has a natural feeling to it, which really goes with the thing of, you know, poets infuse feelings into weather. And I feel like you accomplished that in such a way that you write in your words themselves on one layer are just about nature, but I felt a lot while you were reading it, and I think that you have mastered this thing of putting feelings into weather. Very
Thank
nice.
You.
You should totally be like the weather woman on on like a news channel, but like make everyone cry. You're not just going to describe what is happening. You're going to make us feel it. James, what did you think?
That phrase of the phrase that caught my eye really and an emotion was that says the droplets take the path of salted ancestors weaving towards the chin. You know, the salted ancestors, you know, kind of imply a little negativity there. I'm not sure that if I'm correct to say that.
I mean, you know, it can be tears. It can be salt water. You know, the idea is to leave it open. At least that was my intent.
Oh, yeah, different, I guess, different interpretation. Yeah, because the way I was looking at it, the salted kind of jumped out at me that, you know, maybe of, you know, family past wasn't exactly a good history.
I could see that as an interpretation. But the cool thing about poetry is it kind of like keeps expanding after we write it to mean even more than we may have initially thought of.
That's true. That exact, yeah, different, you know, people look at, you know, in a different light every time you read it because of the intensity that's here throughout the whole poem. You know, you feel that emotion. I think it's a great write. Good write, Babbler. Very good.
Thank you.
And Marcus, what did you think of it?
My apartment has to make it me. The onomatopoeia is just, it's spot on. That one stanza really sticks out. I keep rereading this over and over and over. Drip, dropping into making streams headed out to sea.
I love that.
Awesome, right.
Onomatopoeia is
appreciate
awesome.
Appreciate that.
Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I really like this. Plus, I'm amusing myself with the idea of Babbler being a weather girl and saying things like, here in the Midwest, bear scalps are shivering, and meanwhile, down south, pattern music calls.
Oh, my God.
But
I'm the best way to announce weather.
But I really actually... I like how you put so much emotion into a poem that really doesn't have a lot of emotional language. But the dropping was good because it gives a sense of movement that I really appreciated. Now, me personally, I get where James was coming from with the salted thing, but the path of salt ancestors. Now, see, I actually took that as a positive thing, but that's because I always, yeah, to me, I think of where in the Bible where it says, you know, we are to be salt of the earth, and I'm a very big fan. I probably overuse it of using salt in my poetry as a metaphor because to me, salt is a natural preservative. It's a natural antibiotic. People used it to help heal and clean wounds. I mean, to me, really. If you think about it, salt is such a necessity for life over the years that salted ancestors to me comes across as something that's very strong and very healing. But that is a matter of my personal perspective on it. And like Faziana said, the wonderful thing about poetry is we poets, we write a poem, we put it out there, and it expands and it grows. I do like the music powers, the pattern music calling parched roots to sip, spiders to flee for higher ground. It's almost a kind of offering up of oneself, like as if you were the rain and offering yourself up to those that are really in need of that strength and encouragement. I just think it's a wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you. We appreciate
beautiful
it.
Beautiful comment. So, Babbler, as the new co-host, I'm going to put you in charge for a little bit of comment coordinating. So I'm going to read this next poem, and then you can ask for comments from people.
Oh, boy, I hope I remember everyone who's here.
If you get stuck, I'll help. But, I mean, I have lost track of that myself in the past. So, you know, if we miss you, give a yell. All About the Weather by Irish Rose. There's nothing better than sultry, hot, warm weather underneath the palm frond afternoon, lounging in a fine twine-spun hammock, soft winds, massage, caressing body and mind through and through. The breeze opens wide, its soft, warm mouth tentatively tasting the shadowy, dark-edged skin of cumulus nimbus clouds, virile, stretched out, loud and erect, brazenly crossing the horizon, raging full of angry lust, disgusting, dark, roiling, bellowing, sadistically slapping the beach coast. Drums pound, hear the beat thundering, churning up riptides, maul the harbor. Now gone. End poem.
Mm.
So that was by Irish Rose.
Wow, it was so violent and stormy and just raging, and you could just feel the emotionality to it, which works so well with the prompt. Just to, you know, the thrashing, and then the way weather passes, you know, the end, it just ends. I think visually this works just so stunningly well. I just thought this was a really great write. I'm starting to discover that I'm an Irish Rose fan. So I think I'm going to pass it over to you, Marcus. What did you think?
Now, hold on a second. I had to take myself off of the mute. Wow, Anya Mar gets to smoke a cigarette. the cumulus cloud, the zero stretched out loud and direct. Basically, cross on the horizon. Oh, my God. The metaphors are beautiful. This is a wonderful ride. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's a really great write. And what did you think, James?
You know, that it seems to me that there's a little sensuality going through this poem, especially that second stanza, the lounging in a fine twine spun hammock, soft winds, the massage caressing body and mind through and through. There may be some sensuality play in that stanza somewhere, and I kind of like that little twist that's within that stanza.
I agree. Angry lust, I think, supports that as well. So excellent comment. Cam, what did you
know,
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, because it starts off with, you know, there's nothing better. You know, I guess, you know, satisfaction comes into play with that, you know, that there's nothing better. And then it goes into the sultry, hot, warm weather, you know, where, and then she jumps in where it's, you know, caressing your body and mind, you know, throughout. It's really you know, a sensual twist on the emotions of, you know, the physical too, not only the mental, but the physical comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that's an excellent comment.
Thank you.
Pam, what do you think?
Well, and let's not forget the clouds are, what are they, long and erect and brazenly crossing horizons.
That's stretched out.
Ooh. Loud, erect, and brazenly crossing the horizon. Now, if those aren't some sexy clouds, I don't know what is. But, no, she is so clever. I really like her writing. She is very clever with sensual imagery, weaving nature in there, giving it a sense of not only the sensuality, but personification. I can see why she made it onto June Johnson's amazing imagery list. I did like the raging, full of angry lust, gusting, dark, glowing, bellowing, sadistically slapping the beach coast. Drums pound, hear the beat thundering. You know, the use of sound, and especially drumming. You know, drumming is very just, I mean, all music is emotionally charged, but there's something about a good drum beat that really just catches, you know, you in the gut. At least for me, it does. So I found that part particularly moving and just an excellent write and very well done.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. Yes.
Yeah, and what did you think of Aviana?
Well, I agree with what everyone's been talking about. I definitely picked up on the sensuality of it and the wildness to it. The whole thing is like it's kind of like aggressive at the same time as it's sensual. So I think it's like kind of like a really powerful connection between the sky and the ground. Like when it talks about sadistically slapping the beach coast, I feel like that's like the water and the land are meeting, and like possibly the water is the masculine and the land is the feminine or something like that, and they're crashing together. And it's like a really powerful engagement. but they're intense in their connection, and I feel like I'm never going to look at clouds the same again. I've never looked at a cloud and thought, oh, how virile and erect that cloud is. it has changed my view. This was really well done. It brought it to life.
You know, if I just may add one more thing, it seems, I don't know if you're feeling it, almost primal in nature, you know, with mm-hmm. when you said, you know, about the sadistically slapping the beach coast and the drums, you know, I think that, you know, really covers the primal edge of, you know, what, you know, being human is all about.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm. So where are we off to next?
I was thinking maybe Pam could read the one by Vicki Moore.
I would be happy to. Let me just post my comment here. And all right, back to Late Night Poets. This is Thoughts of a Teddy Bear by Vicki Moore, and it goes like this. I am so lonely tonight without my partner. We are partners in crime, partners in love, partners in friendship, and partners in life. My constant companion since forever. I think I was made for her. I'll play and sleep alone tonight, for she is with another friend. I think I'm jealous. I know I'm lost without her. I feel like throwing up. Never felt this way before. I hope she comes back soon. I need a hug and poem. Oh, that was sweet.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Aww. Yeah.
Poor... Do you want to go ahead, James? Comment?
Yeah, it's like you give that sigh, you know, that emotional sigh. And it's only, you know, it seems like, you know, when you leave and your dog is home, and when you return, you know, that I'm feeling that like never, that couple of lines at the end, that never felt like this way before. I hope she comes back soon. And, you know, I see the dog waiting at the door. You know, I need your hug. I need your presence, you know, because I'm lost without you. I'm empty. I'm alone. And I need the partner's line runs throughout the poem. And that's a very strong connection when, you know, that word partner is a big term of endearment for me. So, I mean, that's the way I read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought this was a really sad piece. Not sad, I guess that's not the right word. Like heart-wrenching, you know.
Yeah.
The little girl's going to grow up, and she's going to come home less and less to the teddy bear. You know, the reader knows that, and it just makes it even more heart-wrenching because, you know, they become less and less partners as time goes on. A really kind of like deeply like melancholy poem. It's very effective in, you know, using something as tender and sweet as a teddy bear to elicit, like, deep emotions of, like, sorrow and that bittersweetness of growing up. So I think, you know, for instilling emotions into something that is actually emotionless, using the symbol of a teddy bear as, a, you know, a piece of childhood and what maybe the teddy bear goes through, you know, this is a skillful use of personification to really, you know, poke at those emotions. So I think this is a very effective write in that way. So I think Vicky did a very good job. Marcus, what did you think?
I can't hear you, Marcus. Are you maybe...
I'm sorry. I'm on my. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
It's a good poem. It really is. It brought emotion.
Mhm. Yeah. No, I agree with that. Pam, anything you'd like to say?
Oh, absolutely. I thought this was. I really liked all of your comments. It's powerful and effective, especially in the fact that, you know, she uses the title "Thoughts of a Teddy Bear." So you're almost thrown off by how deep this poem is. Like, to me, I was almost expecting something a little more lighthearted. And then when you realize that this is going into facing such issues as loss and jealousy, honestly, I think what Vicky needs to do is take this teddy bear character and make it into a series of children's books, because this would be a really cool way to have children read about emotions and experiences that they're going through, and to learn about them and learn to cope with them through the eyes of a character that, you know, is relatable to young children. You know, because it's very intelligent and emotionally intelligent and touches on the issues of how does a young child deal with jealousy or with a friendship, you know, parting. So... Excellent write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And Aviana, that brings us back to you.
Well, you know, the children's librarian in me is really impressed with Pam's suggestion, and I agree. This could be a story that teaches kids how to feel with losing a friendship or, you know, some kind of partnership of any kind. And James was right. It repeats partner quite a bit. And to deal with the loss of that, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Toy Story, as the toys are starting to feel abandoned because Andy is growing up. But this is a much more somber expression of it, whereas Toy Story is mostly comedy, although it does have its tear-jerking moments. But this definitely takes, like, the emotion into it, and I think that's perfect for the prompt, because it was about poets infusing emotions in things that don't necessarily have emotions, and, you know, a teddy bear doesn't really care if we pay attention to it, but she brought this teddy bear to life in a way that I felt for it. I had empathy for this teddy bear. Do you remember those IKEA commercials? I think it was IKEA. Some kind of furniture store had commercials, like, probably 10, maybe 15 years ago, where it was like, there's this little broken lamp on the side of the road, and it was like, do you feel sad for the little lamp? Because it has, like, a little face. And it's like, you're silly. It's a lamp. Stop being so sad about the lamp. Go buy a new one. And then it was just like, do you feel sad for the lamp? But the thing is, I did, because it was, like, out in the rain, and there's, like, you see the lamp kind of, like, abandoned on the side of the road. And I feel like maybe Vicky wrote that commercial, because I was, like, crying for that lamp, and now I'm going to cry for the teddy bear.
Yeah, I think that was IKEA, yeah.
That's funny. And, you know, the twist here is that she's taking an inanimate object, teddy bear, and applying those human qualities and injecting those human qualities into the teddy bear. And I'm not sure if the person who owns the teddy bear, I'm not sure that relationship. I'm trying to, is there a relationship or is there not a relationship there? Is it a one-way relationship or is it a two-way relationship? Is that a good question to imply regarding this poem?
Yeah, I mean, you can wonder, is that child super close to this bear? Because, you know, sometimes the child has, like, one toy that they bring everywhere, and sometimes it's just another toy on the shelf. So it's a good question.
Yeah, it's just, it's hitting me now as I read it two or three times, and that's the way I'm looking at it. Like, maybe is it only one way that the teddy bear has the strong connection to the human?
That's a question that only the author can answer, and we do have other poetry we have to get to. So that's kind of one of those questions you can ask it, but we're not going to come up with the answer tonight.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
So our next poem is by Eric Svensson. And Marcus, would you like to read that one for us?
Heck no. Yes. This is by Eric Svensson. Kids with heart sick. No bruising hearts for those. Having good sleep.
Hey, Mark, I can't hear you very well.
Hold on a second. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I'll start over.
Thank you.
I am sorry. I'm on some skull candy Bluetooth crap. Anyway, this is by Eric Svensson. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Heads or heart tails. Oh, brazen heart so bold. Battered boat beat against vivid current. Concave crimson blood. Conscious braille. Braille against convex reality's complexity. Nascent black thunder clouds mushroom storm gathered. Zigzag combustion. Whimsical widget fleecy clouds devoured. Flare and flame reality's stacked fire. Break on through those EQ versus IQ. Poet wager, wag curly creative till suck of banquet. Deep and wide, snappings grasped from vines, complex, trodden, barrel, extract, vintage, culture. Magenta, ruby, red grapes. Of habitants, barrel inserted to simmer glimmer, merry moonshine moments brewed, concave heart pump stations create qualified energy. Science says loads more than the mind does. Remember once she played Stradivarius. Long jet, black, raving hair cascaded down as the bow stroked the deeply resonant impulse.
Thank you. Great read. Pam, do you want to start us off on this one?
Absolutely. I would be happy to. I have to say, well, first of all, that was an excellent read. Eric, it's just his imagery. It's always thought provoking. This is actually, now did he go with the poets infuse emotion? That's a really good prompt for him, because he often uses a lot of imagery that you wouldn't relate to being emotional. And in fact, I remember when I first started reading him, I had the hardest time connecting with his poetry. But the more I, kept reading him and kept diving into his poetry, the more you see layers of thought that he puts in there. And I really like Black Thunder Clouds, Mushroom Storms Gather, Zigzag Combustion. It's not just a storm, but the fact that he mentions the mushroom clouds, almost like a neutron type, what do they call those bombs? Almost like a bomb going off. And then I like that he mentions the emotional intelligence versus, the idea of how you can be intelligent IQ-wise, but are you emotionally connecting with people? And what else here? Magenta, ruby, red grapes of happenstance, barrel, winter to simmer, glimmer, merry moonshine moments, brood. I like how the merry moonshine moments brood, because to me it speaks of the whole idea that those, during the storms of life, the joyful moments are created in the little things, and we create our own joyful moments. I always really like delving into his poetry, because it seems like that you're always going to come up with something new each time. So, very well done.
Yeah, I like that. I love the way, I love some of the interpretations you've pulled out of here. It's fascinating. James, do you want to go next?
Yeah, it's at, the last stanza, too. Well, he's very, very abstract in his, the way he writes is very abstract, but it's like you stated before that, you really have to have a deep read or a number of reads to try and decipher, the puzzle. It's almost like a puzzle that you need to really put together, and that last stanza kind of hits me in the sense that, it says, remember once she played a Stradivarius, and, a Stradivarius is, a very, very important piece or tool of music, and, that line, resonates with me, that stanza, actually the whole stanza, long jet, black raven hair cascaded down. I'm wondering if that has to do with something in her past that isn't present at this point in her life. I'm trying to figure that issue out. But that is a very good write. And I'd like to read more of his poetry to really decipher the puzzle. It really is a very good write.
Yeah, I agree. Like Pam said, the more you read of his stuff, the more I feel like I comprehend it. The more I read, the more I kind of understand like his pattern of thinking. I don't know how to phrase that. So my read on this is, at the beginning, there's this relationship, the oh brazen heart so bold, just falling like passionately and deeply in love with someone, like connecting very deeply. And then the relationship like turns sour. There's black thunder clouds and there's fighting and there's arguments. Flare and flame, reality, stacked pyre, break on through those constricted emotions. And then it goes on to the EQ versus IQ, poets wager, wag curly creative tales, is kind of like they're not emotionally connecting anymore. And that, they're kind of trying to rekindle this relationship. And then that last stanza, remember once she played a Stradivarius, long jet black raven hair cascaded down as the bow stroked deeply the resonant strings. You know, she's playing this violin and playing, I think, on his heartstrings. Like, don't you remember how you loved her? And doesn't she still play? Dusk forked, fraught lightning streaks. You know, it's a rocky, cloudy relationship. But there's still, like, this memory and still this feeling deep in the heart of it of the relationship. So that's what I see in this, and I really enjoyed it. Ephesiana, what did you think?
Well, I think that you're right about it being about the relationship that has gone poorly, and there are now these storm clouds, and that maybe it was a very smart person who didn't know how to connect emotionally. And unfortunately, that's often a thing where you know, people who have very high IQs have trouble connecting sometimes. Not always, but there tends to be people have one or the other that is stronger, their emotional connection.
It's so true. Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of really intelligent people who struggle with connecting, and I think that might be a part of it. I was really impressed with the way that it has alliteration and can never say that word, the consonant one, consonants, maybe, where they repeat the same consonant a lot throughout the thing. The sound of it all just really flowed nicely, and I love the way that it's really original wording of things. It's not the typical phrasing, and I find that fascinating. It is definitely one that I want to read a couple of times and fully grasp all the little nuances, because I think that it's layered.
Mm-hmm. All right, Marcus, you gave it a read. Do you want to tell us your thoughts?
Really? Serious? Really? Loves a lot. This poem is outstanding. I mean, I love you guys. Great poem.
Thank you. Ephesiana, where are we off to now?
Now we have one by My Angel 3. And Babbler, I'm going to get you to read that one.
All right. So this is Tempest by My Angel 3. She is not scared of this storm inside her anymore, the slow fermenting of emotion that reverberates on the horizon like approaching thunder. And the prompt, a sharp crack of lightning that very often sends her into a rapid plummet. Frightened? Not anymore, for it is a part of her. One that she cannot change, and she will rope the gale and ride it safely to the other side. End poem.
Mm.
All right. Pam, do you want to start us off?
Absolutely. You know, that's just like one of those classic moments we all have to have where we read a poem and then forget that we're the one that's supposed to be leading the comments, and we sit there in silence.
Sorry.
But, you are doing an excellent job tonight, by the way. I can tell you and Ephesiana are going to make a great team.
Thanks. Kind of learning as I go. First time.
Oh, I totally
You're awesome.
Understand. I've had many first times, but This is a beautiful emotive write, and you know the one word title was I like that tempest, because you know it makes you think of the storm, the tempest, but it also kind of makes you think of the Shakespeare play The Tempest, which you know to me connects a lot emotionally. I like the slow fermenting of emotion that reverberates on the horizon like approaching thunder. To me, that really speaks strongly of something that we know we're eventually going to have to face. It almost has the kind of, like, that idea of anxiety where you have to get something done. There's a talk that needs to be had, and you're just not looking forward to it. You know, it's a wonderfully written. I'm really enjoying this prompt and these rites because I find that you can take weather in a lot of different directions as far as expressing emotions. So, excellent rite and very well done.
For me, I guess this poem, I got like internal, you know, someone who has strong feelings, you know, gets upset easily, gets angry easily, you know, just expresses emotions in big ways. And it used to be kind of scary, you know, to get overwhelmed by a feeling. But as you learn more, you know, you understand more about your feelings. It's not so much about stifling them so much as understanding that it's a part of you and it's who you are. Like, this is how I feel, and this is who I am. And it's not so frightening anymore, just because you understand where it's coming from and that big feelings are okay to have. So that's what I got out of it is you know, understanding yourself better, better grasp of who you are and how you feel about things. So I thought it was a really empowering piece, and that was what I was seeing in it. Marcus, what are your thoughts?
Oh, God, I'm going to mute again. Sorry. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now? Yes, I can hear you now.
Actually, the whole thing is just good. I mean, it's like a zebra stripes, you know. You can't change me. I love that one stanza and the pop question mark. It's the lightning that very often seems to wrap on it. It brings me right back to like a woman scorn, you know. Don't piss her off. This is really cool. I like it.
Good point. Yeah, no, I agree. Thanks, Marcus. And James, what did you think?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, fear is a very strong emotion, you know, for anybody, whether you're a sensitive or a strong person. And she's kind of faced her own fear. And she recognizes it. Finally, it feels like she recognizes her fear and says, I'm gonna control this. And, you know, especially the last stanza says that, you know, one that she cannot change, she will rope the gale and ride it safely to the other side, means to me that, you know, she's mastered it. You know, it was out of her control, but by the end of her recognizing it, she can reel it in, you know, and finally control it and ride it safely to the other side, which, you know, means that she can, you know, progress and not move backwards, rather move forward instead of in reverse. You know, that's how I read it.
I really like that. I think that's an excellent insight to this piece. And Ephesiana, what do you think?
Well, I agreed with you when you were saying that it's empowering and that she's kind of accepting this piece of herself. It kind of reminds me, I had this therapist once who said that I didn't allow myself what I construed to be negative emotions, like anger or fear or like jealousy. Those were things that I like tried not to feel. And she's like, emotions are negative in themselves. How you handle them is sometimes, but you have to be able to let yourself feel things. And I feel like when she's not scared of the storm inside her anymore, she's accepting that, like, you're allowed to feel those things and that she's going to embrace that, and but use it in a constructive way. Just because you have anger doesn't mean you're going to do something crazy about it, because she's going to ride it safely to the other side. I think that that is a really empowering, like you said, way. And I loved that it was described as fermenting emotion, you know, that it kind of, like, if you hold it in, it turns itself into something stronger, if it's left there, and it reverberates on the horizon, like, it's eventually going to explode. So you have to just, like, give in to that storm.
Yes.
I liked it.
Yeah, I like that too. So where are we off to now?
Now we have one by Theo Onik, and there should be an audio for that, I believe, Pam.
There is, yes, and I'll go ahead and push play.
And so I became a scientist. Angels used to cry for me, oh Lord, they used to care for me and my soul. Tell me that those clouds we sometimes see are their golden lost time's memories. From where all feelings, from where all light, giving birth to rivers and thunders, brightening the sight. Angels, they used to walk for me on the canopy of stars, now gone blue light, blue bright. Then man sent a few notices, and a teacher came out of that blue, telling me, hey, did you know that a cloud is made of... Damn you, breaking all my illusions. I thought I was loved and cared for, making me see the plain truth under our eyes, making me curious about our teaching on forms sublime, metaphors for the feelings and thoughts of my angels, reaching for soft grounds and hard statues, left out under the sun, into the cold, their memory thundering, whispering, or warming your souls. I left the angels, slowly going with your time, your mighty thoughts and knowledge, killing fantasies sublime. So, I became a scientist.
I really loved the music with that. It was really great hearing her read it. I'm not sure that I've heard her read before. I really enjoyed this piece. You know, for me, it felt kind of like, not so much as a loss in faith as it was the, you know, an understanding that not everything that you explain as a child with, like, myths and fantasy or godlike things is accurate, and that sometimes there, you know, are more worldly experiences. That kind of, as you start to understand that, like, that the magic of childhood fades, and you start realizing and then looking for your own real-world explanations for everyday phenomena that maybe as a child you just considered magic. Even though there's kind of a sad wistfulness to it, it's, you know, that letdown of losing belief in things that you believed in as a child. I think those very effectively emotional, you know, the attributing to the weather to gods and realizing that it's atmosphere, and just how different that feels in the mind. But, you know, it's a very different feeling when you attribute something to something mythical versus, you know, electrons in the air. So I really enjoyed this. It was, like, sadly wistful. I thought this was an excellent write. James, would you like to go next?
Yeah, it was. I'm reading that, you know, it seems that he had, it says breaking all my illusions, you know, it says damn, almost angry, you know, damn you, you know, breaking all my illusions or his beliefs. And it seems that, yeah, maybe there was, you know, a little fantasies like, you know, the Easter Bunny, Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy. And, you know, those were reality for him. You know, it says, you know, that there were metaphors for the feelings and thoughts of my angels. You know, and now, you know, he wraps it up by saying, you know, the bottom stanza, you know, your mighty thoughts and knowledge killed my fantasies sublime. You know, so I became a scientist where I had to cave in to your intelligence. You know, now 2 + 2 I know equals 4, where before, like I mentioned, you know, the Tooth Fairy, you know, the Santa Claus, that was actually real for me, but it didn't relate into your world. You know, my world, it actually meant something, but I guess if I'm going to jump into your world, I have to become a scientist and make sure that 2 + 2 = 4 all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost kind of matter of fact. It's almost like one or the other. I really like that. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like that. First of all, the SoundCloud was really appreciated, and I always enjoy her reading. She's almost like, it's as if it's a performance. I always imagine she'd be great on a stage reading poetry in front of people. What I like about the answer at the end, where the ending line that says, and so I became a scientist. Now, that line in itself is not extremely emotional. It's just a very matter-of-fact line. But because it comes after all this other stuff where you realize there's been this loss of innocence, this loss of faith, this, you know, those moments in childhood that we all go through, you know, where we realize something isn't true. Like mine was the Tooth Fairy. I believed in the Tooth Fairy up until the point where one night I opened my eyes and I realized the Tooth Fairy had large hands with bright orange hair just and freckles just like my father. And I the chance that the Tooth Fairy had large hands with orange hair on them wasn't very likely. But, you know, and yeah. Sorry, I couldn't, sometimes I just get stuck in my head. But, you know, but it is that kind of sense of losing a moment of innocence or, a sense of faith. And so by having all that other stuff and having that person realize that they have somewhere that they have to make a change in their life or they feel pressure to make a change in their life, you get a weight of sadness added on to, and so I became a scientist. And so just an excellent write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. No, your story makes me think of, like, my childhood. So when I was about 4 years old, I realized I didn't believe in fairies anymore. and that I had never really believed in fairies, but I was just realizing that I was pretending, and I was like crushed by that loss of being able to believe and trying
Absolutely.
To articulate that effectively to my mother and feeling like I'm failing miserably on trying to find the words to explain why I'm upset. Because I wasn't even upset about the fact that there wasn't fairies. I was upset about the fact that I couldn't believe anymore.
Yeah, because you can never really go back. It's really difficult to go back to completely believing, you know, in fairies and all that once you
Yeah.
I totally get that.
Once you realize you don't. Marcus, what do you think?
There's a view from oh God, heartfelt again. I'm sorry. Beautiful.
Kind of garbled again for me. I can't hear you very well.
Can you hear me now? Damn it.
Yes.
Can you hear me? It was a good poem. It really was. It was very, very, very extremely heartfelt. Okay, you guys. I've seen some serious stuff, okay? I've seen some, like, really serious stuff. And as far as fairy tales go, keep believing. Just keep believing. I love this poem.
Thank you. Yeah. Ephesiana, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I loved her audio. Having the music in the background, she's done that a few times recently where she has the music, and it just creates this atmosphere that I love. And she, like, almost sang the beginning. Most of it was more spoken word, but it suited so well having the music there. It had that kind of magical feeling of believing that the clouds were messages. And it definitely made me nostalgic for my childhood, like you guys were saying. My friends and I used to lay on the ground at recess, and there was this hill behind our elementary school, and we would look at the clouds, and we would read our fortunes based on the clouds. We were sure that the shape of the clouds was going to tell us something really important about what we need to know. And usually it was like a dinosaur or something, which made no sense for a fortune, but at one point, someone came and explained to us, like, what the clouds were actually. And it was heartbreaking because we thought we could stand on them. And to realize that, like, if you were there, you would just fall through the mist was quite devastating. And that feeling is expressed so beautifully here. And there's it's almost like an angry of became a scientist. It's like, in your face, I'm just going to become the person who understands things. But it's like there's a blame there. I guess I'll be a scientist. And I really love the way that she put it all together. She brought in that kind of childlike belief and also the reality of things. But I don't think that science has to mean a killing of fantasies. It's just a different concept because it's still pretty amazing that the way that clouds are made and all the different shapes and things that they make and how we depend on them for nature. But I thought that her performance was so magical. I was completely lost in her voice and the music. Oh, and
right,
I guess
so.
it's that's everyone, right? This next one is by Red Summertime, and I'm going to get Pam to read that, if you will. And Pam, can you also please read the second half of the AN at the end?
You know, I would like to, but I really have to step away and take care of something personal, so I will be back.
That's fine. I'll do it. Rainbow Baby, acrostic poem, rhymed and metered by Red Summertime. Raindrops in sunlight painting the heaven, arched heptad of assorted bright colors, indigo violet born of seven, nature's wonders rivered by day's lovers, band of blue, yellow, orange, all cloven, of green and red, rare beauties uncovered, where colors by sweet angels are woven, ballad of beauty that to me befell, a chromatic melody, joyous glee, bestows the sky where the illusion dwells, yet whenever you'll look, there shall it be. And if you read the acrostic down, it says Rainbow Baby. And then he dedicates this to his grandson, Ethan, who is a rainbow child. A rainbow child is a child born to a family that has suffered the loss of a child due to miscarriage and death during the previous pregnancy. Colors are cloven because we see half a rainbow only. And I found this very touching. It's a recognition of the loss in his family, but also the joy in finding this new child who has brought color back to their life. And the thing about a rainbow is you can't have it unless there is the rain. And so there was this sadness in their family, and it has made the joy of the new baby all the stronger and more visible. I thought this had such strong emotion within it, and to say that he's infusing emotion into the weather, as the prompt says, is an understatement. I really felt this one. And thank you, Red. I know he said he doesn't want to be judged in the contest. He just wanted to contribute. And I appreciate you sharing this poem with us.
All right. I loved this piece. When I read it the first time, I was just blown away by, like, how well it works as an acrostic. I'm not always a big fan of acrostics. I feel like they can feel really constrained because people are trying to jam, you know, the poem to fit these letters. But this doesn't feel like that. This reads so well, you know, and it touches all the different colors of the rainbow and then ends with where colors by sweet angels are woven, which works just well. And then he did also manage to rhyme and meter it, which is, I've never seen another acrostic that managed to pull that off. And then, of course, the word baby focuses on the baby, which, you know, is just really, I think, just a wonderful place to end it, you know, to manage to make the rainbow be about the rainbow and the baby be about the baby without making it feel limiting, I think is just, it shows incredible skill. And then also to convey, you know, that emotion so well, just the seeing the color after grief. And, you know, when he looks at the child, you know, there are all the colors of the rainbow. I just think this is a really beautiful piece. Marcus, what do you think?
I already placed my comments. Sun dog.
And James, what do you think?
Yeah, the last stanza, the ballad of beauty that to me befell, a chromatic melody, joyous glee, bestows the sky where the illusion dwells, yet whenever you look, there it shall be. You know, it kind of tells me that, you know, he's getting over the grief of the first event, which, you know, of course, nobody wants to experience that emotion. And the joy that, you know, this, you know, newborn brings to them, they'll never forget, you know, through the rainbow, they'll never forget the first incident because it'll always be there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the grief of loss isn't, especially that type of grief, you don't just get over that type of grief easily. And I agree with you. I think this does a really good job at conveying that feeling. You know, it doesn't forget about the loss, but it still embraces the joy. Yeah, great observation. So, Feliciana, that brings us back to you.
Okay. This next one is by Daniel Deschino. And, James, would you be willing to read that one for us?
Okay, let me bring this one up. Personification. I am earth and rock that wonders the globe. The air lights fires within my veins as the sun nourishes with an ancient bond. I ebb and flow with the pull of the moon, like the tides that pulsate life to the shores of the desert beaches. And I harmonize with the cycle of trees as I nourish from their fruit and breathe from their breath. Conscious energy born from the earth on which I stand, I rejoice in an ancient emotional connection and sing the harmonies of life with the rhythms of the inanimate. I hear the wind sing of its travels and breathe life into all it caresses. I feel the warm, loving touch of the sun as it awakens me each morning with a smile. I endure the intense wrath of the oceans as its anger is unleashed with every storm. I watch the trees dance to the gentlest musical breeze and hear them speak by the voice of the wind. I embrace the calming touch of a cool spring rain as it kisses my skin with love and affection. And I am connected with the pulse of the world as its heart beats between the peace of the night and the energy of the day. End poem.
Excellent read. Thank you. I really loved this. You know, the personification is earth and stone. It's just so beautifully done. You know, I really was particularly drawn to the lines, I rejoice in an ancient emotional connection and seeing the rhythms of the inanimate. You know, the word inanimate there, you know, drives home the point of personification, but it also is such a nice contrast. You know, all these other verbs, you know, rejoicing and singing and the idea of harmony and rhythm all kind of points to things that are alive, which a stone is not. And yet none of these things seem far-fetched or out of reach, you know, that they're all graspable. And so I really enjoyed it, but they didn't just pick the weather. They picked like the classically inanimate object, gosh, now all of a sudden all of the thoughts go flying out of my head. Like a rock, sitting like a rock, you know, like something that really doesn't move, but they've managed to write an entire piece about, the feelings and emotions and sensations of being a stone. And I really enjoyed it. I think it was just fabulously well done. And then I really liked the last lines too. And I am connected with the pulse of the world as it beats between the peace of the night and the energy of the day. Just connected with the heartbeat of everything that is alive. I thought this was an excellent piece to personify a stone so effectively. I just think it was remarkably well done. Pam, what do you think?
Well, I just got back, so if If you haven't had anyone else comment yet, if you could have someone comment and get back to me, I'll be happy to.
Yeah, not a problem. Let's go to Marcus. What do you think?
42. Come on now, 42. The meaning of life.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes.
Yes. Beautiful poem. I loved it.
It is a really great piece. Ephesiana, what did you think?
I loved it. I love that it incorporates all the different elements. You know, there's the water, the air, the earth. Okay, not as much the fire, but it's still, it really connects with all different parts of nature. And the wind is a really strong force in this that brings everything else to life. The trees speak through the wind. The water moves with the tides. There's so much movement and feeling and music within nature. It talks about the rhythms and how he's harmonizing with the cycle of the trees. And not just the trees, but the cycle of the trees. So it makes me think of, like, the seasons and how they bloom and they grow and then they fall away. And I think humans do end up connecting with those cycles. He expresses it so beautifully. I really enjoyed this. Last night he called my other show Double Helix, and it was the first time that I've heard him read, and I'm really impressed, and I'm definitely going to be reading more of his poems. I really, really enjoyed this.
Mm-hmm. And, I really like what you pointed out about all the elements. I hadn't really noticed that. That was an excellent observation. And James, what did you think?
Yeah, I was, amazed how, he connected basically with nature, because he says, in the first line, I am earth and rock, that I think that word should have been wanders, not wonders, but, it seems like, almost like a rolling stone gathers no more. So he's traveling, the globe, with these elements of nature that he's encountering. And it's almost, like he's, stopping to smell the roses and, feel the wind and feel the sun and look up at the trees. And he's enjoying everything that, God put on this earth instead of overlooking it, and that's how I feel that those points he tried to get across were really positive in this poem.
Mm-hmm.
The last line, it says, and I am, connected with the pulse of the world as its heart beats between the peace of the night and the energy of the day. So, he really, really feels the positive energy that, I guess other people don't, or like I said, other people overlook or take for granted.
No. Spot on. Mm-hmm. What you said, spot on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that was very perceptive. Pam, are you prepared to make a comment, or do you want us to come back around?
I am prepared. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I really like this. I think it was an interesting choice to title it Personification, but it's kind of cool because it gives us an idea of what's important to him in this poem, at least. That's how I get it. And I have to say, Faziana, it was great to have him call into Double Helix, and I hope we hear more from him because he's a great reader and really some thoughtful commenting. So I'm looking forward to reading more of him and hearing from him more. I like the statement, I am earth and rock that wanders the globe. And And, you know, that I get the idea of, like, because of the type of personification, that you almost, to me, I think about if rocks could talk, if every rock that laid on the earth could tell us about the lessons it's learned throughout the ages, you know, that could you imagine the type of knowledge we would have? And I like how there's this kind of, it speaks to me of the kind of connection that man should have with nature. Unfortunately, we don't. But, you know, that idea that if we could connect to nature and learn to calm ourselves down, you know, I think it's a beautiful, thought-provoking rite and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it was an excellent rite. Louisiana, I think that's back to you.
All right, our next one is by Pink Fairy 5, and I will give that a read. I've Got This by Pink Fairy 5. My insight is tattered and torn, nothing left to see here except threads of my confidence. I am exhausted, having battled tigers, lions, and bears. Oh, my! Emerald City is much harsher inside my mind than it ever was in Kansas. I cannot think. Even my eyelids are exhausted. My inspiration is taking a nap in a foreign country. I've got this, my phoenix assures me. Go to sleep, baby. I've got this. End poem. And this is to the second quote, the one that's Will Rise.
Yeah, no, when I read this one earlier today, I really liked it. It's got like some punch to it. And I feel like we're hearing Dorothy, you know, after like the listening to your inner voice after like ordeals, you know, all these ordeals, and you're just exhausted and you're wanting to give up. But then just turning all of it off and following, just letting your inner guts take the lead, you know, to just stop thinking so hard and just take action is kind of how I took it. I thought it was a really creative piece, and I love the kind of comedic tone to it. I thought this was a really fun and enjoyable write. What did you think, James?
And you know, as I read this, it was a nice comparison to the Wizard of Oz, you know, in which, you know, Dorothy is searching, you know, for the right road, you know, follow the yellow brick road, to find that road to get her back, you know, back home where it's safe, you know. And it seems like it is her in the beginning. You know, it says, you know, my inside is tattered and torn. There's nothing left to see here except threads of my confidence, which means, you know, she's worn tired of her search. You know, she went left and she went right, and she didn't get any satisfaction out of that. But, you know, by the end of the poem, you know, she says, you know, I've got this. This my phoenix assures me. So, you know, she's transforming, and as she's getting more and more confidence, she transforms into this phoenix, which rises above all the confusion. And, you know, don't worry, you know, go to sleep, baby. I've got this. So she's finally made it and gets the true satisfaction of it all.
I really like that take.
May I?
Yeah, go ahead.
She wants a little R&R. She needs a little R&R. Plain and simple. You go, girl.
That was good. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah. No, great comment. Faziana, what do you think?
I really liked it, especially the first line, My inside is tattered and torn. You know, it's not just that her body is tired. It's like she's so exhausted that her insight is gone. Her ability to trust her intuition and to think about things. When you're so mentally worn out and all that's left is threads of your confidence. I think that that's a kind of tired that people don't tend to talk about very much. And I think that it's an important one to recognize. I really liked that she used the whole Dorothy motif and that her phoenix talks like, go to sleep, I've got this. I think her phoenix adds like a little contemporary twist to things in the way that it speaks, and I really enjoyed her delivery.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the delivery of this was really great. Pam, anything you'd like to add?
I really like this. It's a wonderful brevity. The idea of using the Wizard of Oz as the theme for feeling like you're battling all these like different problems in life, the lions, the tigers, and the bears, feeling exhausted. And I really liked, like Fabian said, the opening line, my inside is tattered and torn. And I also really liked the ending because, to me, the last three lines make me think of the very end scene where she's in bed and Auntie M just tells her to rest. And it makes you think, maybe the phoenix isn't always, you know, some powerful warrior-looking woman inside of us. Maybe sometimes the phoenix is just like an elderly Auntie M telling us that everything's going to be okay. And I just think it's really just a beautiful write and very well done.
I really like that thought, Pam, that the phoenix could, you know, instead of being some warrior woman, it's just your aunt. Or even just the idea that a phoenix can just be sleep. That's the rebirth of sleep, as Marcus said.
I like that thought.
I thought that was a great point. Okay, so where are we headed next?
I think, Babbler, you should read the next one by Seedhaven.
All right. This is Phoenix Fire, Age 8, by Seedhaven. I burned in a kingdom of white linen, blood steaming at 110, 3 degrees above dead. Heart failed, feels like glass inside, broken and moving slow. Flutter, butterfly pulse, breath like screams over lava, tears stealing precious life, an ocean flooding through my arm and not enough, food untouched and spoiling. Death held my hand and whispered cool nights with jasmine breath. Clear water silence came in sleep until the dreams into flame and skin melted like crayons. She sang to me in the radiance of fever fire dreams. I heard her song, "We'll rise, child, but first we must burn. Fire is transcendent, and so are we who have burned and burned and burned and burned." End poem.
That was a fantastic read, Babbler. I'm going to jump
Thank
in with
you.
A comment. This is really powerful. I like that it used the fever as what the phoenix overcomes. And it even says in the AN that, you know, this was a true illness. I was in a medical journal because I didn't die. The idea that it feels like broken and moving glass when your heart beats, the feeling of the ocean flooding through your arm and it not being enough, to have death promise you the cold and like rest, that I have been that sick, and it's intense. I think that she captured this feeling so well, and she made it beautiful despite its horror. Dreams of dragon and flame and skin melted like crayons. Like, you know, skin melting is not a pretty thing, and it's awful when you feel like that's happening because you're so hot with fever. But to have it described as like the crayons almost makes it artistic. The radiance of fever fire. I've never thought of fever fire as being radiant, but the way that it's described here is like we're going to become something new. Absolutely beautifully written, Seed Haven. I'm very impressed with this, right?
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, if you want to, go ahead. If you want to comment, Marcus, you're welcome to take the floor.
Beautiful poem, beautiful poem. Very realistic. May I? May I? I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead.
He's saying to me in the radiance of fever fire. Fever fire! Okay, I'm not going to say it. Awesome line. Awesome line. Beautiful.
Yeah, no, I also really enjoyed this piece. I had meningitis when I was 9, and I don't really remember too much of the fever, but I remember, like, the crazy hallucinations, and I woke up, like, I regained consciousness sometimes later, and, you know, they basically told my mom to prepare for me to die, and then when it became clear that I was going to pull out and pull through, they told her that there was an 85% chance that I was going to have significant permanent brain damage. And then I didn't. And all the doctors just thought that was really incredible. And so it just made me think of that and the idea of like that as a rebirth and that as like the act of a fever, not accompanied obviously with the same level of literal fever. It's just interesting to think about, like, you know, how transformative that really is and how crazy managing to pull through something that has that slim of odds really is. So I just thought this was a really great piece, and I loved all of the vivid and descriptive language about the fever and the heat, and then this inner voice, you know, that just says, first we must burn, and embracing the burn as like a feeling of transcendence is just incredible, especially when placed into like an 8-year-old narrator. I just really enjoyed it. I just thought this was an excellent write. James, what did you think?
Yeah, the third stanza really, you know, jumped out at me, you know, because he says, death held my hand and whispered cool nights with jasmine breath, which kind of leads me to believe that he was on the brink. He had, you know, 1 foot in the grave almost at that point in time. You know, he felt it slipping away, so to speak. And the clear water silence came in his sleep, you know, which means, you know, maybe the fever broke, you know, for a brief moment. And then, bam, you know, it came back again, you know, in reality, you know, until the dreams of dragons and flame and skin melted like crayons, you know. So it seems that, you know, he was on the border of having that experience of being on the other side, and that maybe being on the other side was better than being on the life side. You know, maybe the death side was more of a comfort to him than, you know, going through the battle of dealing with this fever or this fire.
I really like that. That's an excellent, you know, I agree. I think that stanza is very powerful. Yeah, I mean, the lure of the cold when you're that warm. Pam, would you like to comment?
I just will say I think it's a beautiful and powerful rite, and I love the raw honesty of it and the sense of victory that comes with it. I'm going to keep my comments short because with only a few minutes left, maybe we could get one more rite in, or Faziana can wrap up the show as she sees fit.
Yeah, let's try to fit one more in by Randy G. I'm just going to read it for the sake of being fast. The Faces of Fear by Randy G. With the tired and weary spirit of an old wolf, I look back, remembering the hunt and the teamwork as we attacked. Now I have to humbly beg just to get a paltry little snack. Losing teeth and control, I am no more leader of this pack. Once a ferocious as a dragon, to my enemy's despair, my weapons as deadly as flames flying through the air, now they lay useless and in a helpless state of disrepair. I wallow in self-pity, defeated with no pride left to bear, no more prowling as a lion confidently stalking my prey, single-mindedly straight ahead, no one getting in the way. Now, more like a cowardly lion in a famous musical play, crouching in a darkened den, afraid to face another day. I need an epiphany to coax me from this deadly doom, revitalizing my strength, causing it once again to bloom. The voice of the mighty phoenix in my ears will bloom, rising me from the ashes and out of this fearful gloom. End poem. Now that was amazing, Randy. Unfortunately, we are basically out of time. So if everyone can please write a comment for Randy on his poem, that would be awesome. I definitely will. Babbler, can you briefly say what we have coming next week with your contest?
Yeah. So next week we have a contest that I am hosting, my first one, based on the show Supernatural. So I don't know if you're familiar with the show Supernatural, but it follows a couple of brothers as they go and hunt monsters. So I've picked out several quotes that I think fit the show well, part sinner, part saint. So go check it out. It's up on the on my profile and also in the contest for late night poets.
Good.
Thank you, Babbler. You did amazing for your first show. You were awesome leading the comments. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be working with you. Thank you to James and Marcus and Frank and Pam. And am I missing someone? I think that's everyone who called in. No, there was also who didn't stay very long.
Oh, whatever.
Frank. Okay. Thank you, everybody who called, and thank you, everybody who wrote for our contest. We love you guys. Good night.
Love you.
Thank you. Thank
you. Good night, everyone. Great show.
Good night to everybody, and safe. Be safe.